nice to be among people, and it's really nice to be among all of you on your little baseball card kind of pictures online. Welcome. I'm thinking this week a lot about Leila Bockhorst, who died. What? Okay. She died last Thursday. She was a dear friend. We've known her for 50 years. She was Anlor's teacher. And we lived at Green Gulch together in the early 80s. And her daughter, Sarah, is the same age as our children, our sons. And Sarah and our Noah were best buddies when they were in second and third and fourth grade. They were both quirky. Sarah was quirky and shy. Noah was quirky and not shy. And Leila was such a dear, straight-on practitioner. You know, the stories in which someone expresses the way is right straight on. That was very, very Leila. She was just right straight on, very kind, very attentive, all there. Very dear, straightforward person. And a wonderful Zen teacher. Today is Norman's birthday.
Happy birthday.
I brought treats. I can only share them with people in the room, however. So we've been studying Hongzhi, the cultivating the empty field, the silent illumination of Zen Master Hongzhi this fall. I was studying it during the Upaya practice period. And now we're continuing on with it, with Everyday Zen, and it's been really delightful for me. What I'd like to do tonight is share with you some of what I've learned, as well as my own thoughts about his teachings. So Hongzhi was 11th to 12th century Chinese Zen teacher of towering importance in Zen. He compiled the Koan collection, Book of Serenity. He was abbot of the same temple as Dogen's teacher, Rujing. Hongzhi was a few generations before Rujing. Both Rujing and Dogen taught Hongzhi's silent illumination, which is what we know as shikantaza, just sitting. In Suzuki Roshi's words, shikantaza, our zazen, is just to be ourselves. When we do not expect anything, we can be ourselves. That is our way, to live fully in each moment of time. This practice continues forever. Shikantaza is a practice of utmost sincerity. Nothing to be gained, nothing to get rid of. It's like the sincerity of love. When you love someone, you aren't trying to get something from them. You're not trying to change them, not trying to improve yourself through them. In fact, you may get something and you may change them and you may improve yourself. But these things occur on their own, not by directing our effort toward gain and improvement. In fact, as we all know, trying to get something from someone we love, using people in that way, usually spells doom for the relationship. Because we don't want love to be a commodity. The same principle applies to our sitting practice. If we sit with an idea of what we can attain or experience, exactly that gaining idea will block the way. Because really, we don't want to commodify our practice. We don't want to commodify our very life. Shikantaza is the practice of utmost sincerity. Sincerity means right straight on. No tricks, no sideshows. Showing up moment after moment without judgment or evaluation, regardless of what each moment brings. This requires utmost sincerity. I'm going to read some passages of various of Hongzhi's essays or talks. I'm not quite sure what they are. I think they're called, Taigen Dan Leighton calls them teachings. They must have been talks or essays. Anyway, I'm going to read excerpts from several of them. This one is from Forgetting About Merit is Fulfillment. Do you want me to give you page numbers? So it's 32, 33. Separate yourself from disturbance and face whatever appears before you. Not one iota seeps through from the outside. The two forms, yin and yang, have the same root, and the 10,000 images have one substance. Following change and going along with transformation, the whole is not clouded over by previous conditions. When you reach the foundation of the great freedom, wind blows and moon shines, and beings do not obstruct each other. Afterwards, settle back within and take responsibility. Wisdom returns and the principle is consummated. When you forget about merit, your position is fulfilled. Do not fall for occupying honorable stations, but enter the current of the world and join with the delusion. Transcendent, solitary, and glorious, directly know that transmitting is merit, but having transmitted is not your own merit. Hongzhi says over and over again that we already live in enlightenment, that our practice is to stop obstructing enlightenment, stop thinking we possibly can obstruct enlightenment. And this thinking that we are so powerful that we can actually obstruct enlightenment, we tend to reinforce in ourselves and each other all the time. So when he says, separate yourself from disturbance, I don't think he means turn off the radio and close the window. I think he means separate yourself from the idea that disturbance even exists. He says, face whatever appears before you. And he says, enter the current of the world and join with the delusion. No separation, no disturbance is possible. In his talk called The Misunderstanding of Many Lifetimes, this is page 36, Hongzhi says, we all have the clear, wondrously bright field from the beginning. Many lifetimes of misunderstanding come only from distrust, hindrance and screens of confusion that we create in a scenario of isolation. We do this practice to address our isolation, to tend our hearts, which ache from separation. It turns out that there's nothing that needs doing, just sitting right in the middle of it, allowing that which is unnecessary to fall away, striving to change and improve, trying to learn how to meditate, looking for satisfaction, wanting to be a better person. All those aspirations cloud the waters. That which clouds the waters, that is, our old habits of mind, are difficult to spot, sometimes hiding behind language. Our language creates boundaries, categories, temporality. That's how it works. And that's what we need from language. That's why we created language. But then we get lost inside of language, trapped in the sentence of subject, verb, object, past, present, future. Let's take a look at Hong Zhe's words, maybe get a hint at how we're so easily confused, distracted, and how easily we veer off. In his talk called The Ground That Sages Cannot Transmit, on page 33, Hong Zhe says, "Cast off completely your head and skin. Thoroughly withdraw from distinctions of light and shadow. Where the 10,000 changes do not reach is the foundation that even 1,000 sages cannot transmit. Simply by yourself, illuminate and deeply experience it with intimate accord." So, cast off completely your head and skin. It sounds like we're supposed to get rid of our head and skin. But this is not about removing our head and skin. Do not rid yourself of your head nor your skin. This is about casting off, letting go. Trusting trust as we fall through empty space. This could mean trusting your friend to pick up your child at daycare when you're busy at work, trusting the plumber to fix the leaky sink, trusting your intuition to call your mother, trusting the pasta recipe from the New York Times. All day long, we trust. We trust the ground. We trust the air. So, notice trust. And trust, trust. Trust letting go of the language of repetitive thoughts. Like what I'd rather be doing, or where I'd rather be. Trust letting go of repetitive attitudes of mind, like judgment and self-doubt. Trust that you'll be okay without them and allow them to fall away like falling leaves in autumn. Some tumble down your back, some get caught on your sweater for a while and eventually fall of their own weight, especially if we don't give them more weight. Hong Zhe says, "Thoroughly withdraw from distinctions of light and shadow." So this sentence is not about withdrawing from light and shadow. It's about withdrawing from distinctions, categories, and analysis of categories composed of language. Such activity is our default mode. We learned it in school. I know this well because I taught it in school. It's very useful to be able to think analytically. And for this, it's necessary to establish agreements on categories using language. This is what we do in science, But even in science, the categories are pretty much always provisional, pending additional observation and discovery. So this sentence, thoroughly withdraw from the distinctions of light and shadow, means to immerse ourselves in light and shadow, refrain from mental activity of drawing distinctions. Both of these sentences, cast off completely your head and skin and thoroughly withdraw from distinctions of light and shadow, point to turning toward the immediate sensory moment, hovering there, refraining from the impulse to jump into narrative, to intellectualize and emotionalize after the moment. Refrain from the impulse to engage intellectual and emotional analysis. Stay with, return, and return to immediate sensory contact. That's our practice. It takes some time to even spot our impulses. We just must stay very close each moment, very close. Where the 10,000 changes do not reach is the foundation that even 1,000 sages cannot transmit. 1,000 sages cannot transmit because it has no language. In Hongzhe's talk, Face Everything, Let Go and Attain Stability, he says, you accord and respond without laboring and accomplish without hindrance. Everywhere turn around freely, not following conditions, not falling into classifications. Face everything, let go, and attain stability. Stay with that, just as that. Stay with this, just as this. That and this are mixed together with no discrimination as to their places. Stay with that, just as that. No manipulation, no evaluation. Stay with this, just as this. This is the practice of utmost sincerity, of equanimity. So, it's also a practice that's really difficult. So why do we do this? Why are we doing this? I want to share something that I noticed in several of Hongzhe's teachings. Here is a portion from The Practice of True Reality on page 30. This empty, wide-open mind is subtly and correctly illuminating, spacious and content, without confusion from inner thoughts of grasping, effectively overcome habitual behavior and realize the self that is not possessed by emotions. You must be broad-minded, whole, without relying on others. Such upright, independent spirit can begin not to pursue degrading situations. Here, you can rest and become clean, pure, and lucid. Bright and penetrating, you can immediately return, accord, and respond to deal with events. Clearly manifesting responsive interaction. Here's another one. This is a line from Forgetting About Merit is Fulfillment on page 3233. Wind blows and moon shines, and beings do not obstruct each other. Afterwards, settle back within and take responsibility. So that's just a short excerpt of the longer piece that I read at the beginning. In his talk called Return to the Source and Serve the Ancestors, on page 38, Hongdra says, in 100,000 samadhis, all gates are majestic, all dharmas are fulfilled. Still, you must gather them together and bring them within. To reach the time-honored, return to the source and serve the ancestors. Join together into unity, scrutinize yourself and go on. So what I'm hearing from these passages, these three and others, are beautiful statements of realization, followed by admonishments to not pursue degrading situations, to take responsibility, to scrutinize ourselves. That is, realization is the source of our precepts practice and the true deep source of service as the perfect expression of awakening enlightenment. Service and precepts practice is our true expression in human life. And we discover this through the work of our meditation practice. Letting go of grasping, letting go of confusion, letting go of habitual behaviors, of emotions that take possession of us. Hongzhi emphasized an upright, independent spirit through which we can begin not to pursue degrading situations. Not pursuing degrading situations, that's a pretty big and interesting statement. What comes to my mind is our widespread habit of finding fault, of delving deep in search of our faults, and finding huge underground deposits of faults connected to other deposits. Getting to the bottom of those massive fault deposits without blaming others is unlikely. Finding fault with myself isn't so different from finding fault with others. And yet, Hongzhi says, scrutinize yourself and go on. So how can we scrutinize ourselves honestly, transparently, repeatedly, without degrading ourselves? I think Hongzhi's whole context for speaking about how we live in realization is to convey to us that our true nature is clean, pure, lucid. In other words, seeing ourselves and others as Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, is an ethical act, an ethical practice. Seeing ourselves and others as worthy and dignified and honorable beings allows us to scrutinize and reflect on ourselves without it being degrading or self-destructive. That's what I mean by this is an ethical act. To scrutinize myself, if I don't respect myself, if I don't perceive myself as worthy, strong, and independent, that scrutiny is likely to be harmful to myself, an expression of self-hatred, disrespect, lack of self-worth. these feelings then don't stop with me. They naturally spread to others. So we have a culture of self-hatred, disrespect, and a feeling of helplessness and worthlessness. Again, in Hongzhi's words, almost 1,000 years ago, he's from the misunderstanding of many lifetimes, he says, "We all have the clear, wondrously bright field from the beginning. Many lifetimes of misunderstanding come only from distrust, hindrance, and screens of confusion that we create in a scenario of isolation." I'm reminded of Resma Menachem's book, My Grandmother's Hands. This is a book about racial trauma and the inheritance of such trauma. He says, "Unhealed trauma acts like a rock thrown into a pond. It causes ripples that move outward, affecting many other bodies over time. After months or years, unhealed trauma can appear to become part of someone's personality. Over even longer periods of time, as it is passed on and gets compounded through other bodies in a household, it can become a family norm. And if it gets transmitted and compounded through multiple families and generations, it can start to look like culture." So seeing ourselves with that thought in mind and others as Buddha is an ethical imperative. To not foster this precious Buddha land is to allow and participate in the human legacy of suffering and continuing harm. So to foster our Buddha land, we need self-respect. We need to feel worthy, dignified, independent, and honorable. And this self-respect comes from the realization that I am worthy just as I am. I am loved just as I am, just by virtue of being alive. Being alive is an expression of love, already accomplished. Nothing more is needed. Nothing needs proving. I am a Buddha among Buddhas, and we all live together as Buddhas in this Buddha land of respect, love, worthiness, born of the simple realization that I am here and I am me, not a poster of me, that is, not a static conceptual self, rather a constantly changing self, specific, returning to fully present right now, over and over again. The precepts are our Buddha craft, how we treat each other and ourselves, how we speak to each other and ourselves, how we live together, share space and resources, how we serve each other as ourselves and ourselves as each other, how we cherish life, each moment of life, and care for and protect our home, our practice, ourselves and each other as ourselves. Our precepts are how we live as expression of boundless love and service as Buddhas. Hongzhi gives voice with such clarity and beauty, the true nature of our human lives, not separate, immediate and deep, with precepts emerging from practice realization. So this realization is already here. Through practice, we can bear down in our effort. It means when a thought of self-doubt, of ridicule, of distraction arises, we turn gently away. We give it space. We allow it to fall away. Turn awareness toward the breath deep in the belly. We do this again and again with energy, conviction, gently, not aggressively. It's like rescuing a hummingbird. Gently, with all our attention. Hummingbirds fly into our kitchen. Other birds do too. That is, until I figured out I should close the door. So I learned how to catch them. They come in and flutter along the windowsill in our kitchen, which is about maybe 30 inches off the floor. And what I learned is that I can sort of walk up a little bit close to this fluttering little hummingbird, and I can put my hands up like this above the bird, and then very, very slowly lower my hands until the bird calms down when I do that. And then finally I can touch the bird and then scoop it up in my hands. And it's a little freaked out then, so I just hold it quietly and walk outside till it calms down. And then when I feel it move a tiny bit, then I open my hand and off it goes. Our practice takes all the gentleness, all the tenderness and love, all the strength, the grit and forbearance we can muster on each moment, our only moment. So that's my talk for tonight. Thank you so much for listening and for your practice and for the gift of practice that we all have to give each other. As we know, our whole world needs our utmost sincerity, our love and commitment to this moment of human life on Earth. So thank you. I think what we have plenty of time for both small groups and discussion. The last time I was here, people really enjoyed talking together. But I think I would like to start with the small groups so that you can chat together and see what you think. And I don't have a specific question, but basically what I've talked about tonight is, it's kind of strong words, it's an ethical imperative to be Buddha, you know. It's not just entertainment. It's not just nice for some, but not for me, you know. I'm sort of asserting that no, this is our responsibility. This is why we're here. So maybe I'll just leave it at that, and for you to talk together in threes. And if we do that for 15 minutes, that still gives us plenty of time to get back together and talk to the people online and talk in the room. Is that okay? So somebody puts people Neil together online.
Neil is there.
Neil? Hi, Neil.
So